This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. In his days as a cast member of Saturday Night Live, Bill Murray perfectly captured self-absorbed, disingenuous showbiz types. Who can go to a lounge without thinking of Murray's impressions of cheesy lounge singers? His subsequent film acting career evolved from broad comedies like Ghostbusters and Caddyshack to more complex roles in such films as Groundhog Day and Mad Dog and Glory. Now Murray is getting rave reviews for his performance in the new comedy Rushmore. The film is set at a private school called Rushmore. Murray plays Mr. Bloom, a self-made steel tycoon and school benefactor. Here's an early scene in which he's addressing the student body.
Thank you. You guys have it real easy. I never had it like this where I grew up. But I send my kids here. Because the fact is, you go to one of the best schools in the country, Rushmore. Now, for some of you, it doesn't matter. You were born rich and you're going to stay rich. But here's my advice to the rest of you. Take dead aim on the rich boys. Get them in the crosshairs and take them down. Just remember, they can buy anything, but they can't buy backbone. Don't let them forget it. Thank you.
The one person applauding that speech is the film's central character, Max Fisher. Max loves his school, and he's also fallen in love with one of the teachers. And he needs Mr. Bloom's financial help to impress her. Things get complicated when Mr. Bloom, whose marriage has fallen apart, also falls in love with that teacher. This strikes me as a role that's kind of different from your other film roles, in part because I think there's a lot of sadness at the root of this character.
Well, His role in the film is to be someone who would like to go back and, you know, somehow he forgot what he was thinking about when he was 17. He's made a lot of money. He's got a family that he's not happy with. He's not happy with his life. He's got a Bentley and a nice suit, but he's not interested in himself. He finds his own life pretty disappointing. And here's a kid who is interested in everything, you know, what he does at his school is he starts new clubs at all times. You know, he founded the fencing club, the miniature UN, the beekeepers, the calligraphy club. He's a cheerleader. He does everything. He just throws himself into activities, hoping to find one that works for him. I think people have forgotten your question by now. I know I did, but you said a lot of sadness. So there's a lot of sadness in this fellow, and that sometimes it makes you sadder to see someone that's really happy, really engaged in life when you have detached.
Do you think you played this role differently than other roles that you've had?
Well, I think I tried to work a little deeper than I usually do because there's more stuff in this, you know. Sometimes the roles you get are really about performance. They're really about getting from point A to point B and the least amount of time with the most entertainment value. And the depth isn't going to be much of a factor. In this movie, I tried to bring a little bit more of my own personal, you know, vocabulary into it. Not vocabulary, but my own emotional history into it, so that it felt the way that I've felt when I've had these same emotions.
I don't imagine, though, you'd feel a lot of the same kind of regret that this character would. I mean, well, you found the work that is meaningful for you?
I have found a work that's meaningful for me, but I have regrets about, the idealism that I had when I was 17 and what I have now and how hungry. You know, it's kind of hard to stay hungry through your life, especially when you have success in your job. It's tough to wake up in the morning with a zeal, you know. Sometimes a lot gets done for you, and there's not as much of your own knocking down doors and much of your own grinding. There, all of a sudden, there are people willing to open doors for you and push things out of the way for you to make it easy for you. And somehow, it's a different ride than the one you started out on. I haven't forgotten it. I still know what it feels like, but It just does prepare you a different way when you walk into work every day.
Now, your character smokes in the movie. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if you smoke in real life, and or if you ever smoked, and if you did used to smoke, if you're worried about restarting the habit by smoking again. That's something I'd worry about as a former smoker, if right. I had to smoke for a role.
Well, I never really smoked, although I tried a couple behind the bowling alley as a kid, you know, in a back room of a bowling alley as a kid. But I never really smoked until I had a job in the movies where I had to smoke. I played Hunter Thompson in a movie called Where the Buffalo Roam, and I had to smoke in this part, and he smoked a lot. And when you smoke in the movies and you do a take, you light a, you're smoking a cigarette, you've got to cut and start over again, and they give you a fresh cigarette that was the length of the one you were smoking when the scene started. So it's kind of a crazy thing. You end up smoking parts of 120 cigarettes in a day, you know, just eight puffs or five puffs of about 120 times. And, you know, it's an addiction. So when it was over, all of a sudden I was smoking, and I was like, wow, this is really rough, and I don't quite like this. So I weaned myself of it. And then a few years later, I had another job where I smoked in a movie. And once again, I got hooked on cigarettes. And those, it was a period movie, so I was smoking these Mays Gauloises, you know.
So what'd you smoke in Rushmore?
In Rushmore, I smoked Old Golds.
Gee, I didn't think they even made those anymore.
Well, that's you got to look for them. I had a feeling that would be sort of where he'd be as a nom vet. They had access to all cigarettes in Vietnam. That was one thing they did provide was cigarettes. And if you had an obscure brand, it wasn't a problem to go into the PX and get 12 cartons of Old Gold.
My guest is Bill Murray, and his new movie is called Rushmore. I'm a great fan of your movie acting, and I want to talk to you about a couple of your earlier films. Let's start with Groundhog Day, a film in which I think a lot of people noticed how really funny you were as an actor in, in an adult comedy. In Groundhog Day, you played a TV weatherman sent to cover Groundhog Day in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, and that's the site of the official groundhog. And each subsequent morning, you wake up again to relive Groundhog Day. The same day keeps happening over and over and over again. Was this a change in your career from more... I can't remember what year this was.
Well, I can't either. I used to know, but I don't know anymore. It was in the early 90s or something like that. Or
yeah, did you see this 80s? As a change from more kind of kid-oriented comedy to more adult-oriented comedy?
That was just a much more sophisticated script than most scripts that you ever see. You know, that was an incredibly original idea. This kid, Danny Rubin, this idea just sprung full-blown from his head. He'd never even been to Punxsutawney until I took him there. And he wrote this whole script based on this event. But really what he was talking about was the idea of being stuck in the same day that if you don't work on the change of the improvement of yourself, that you are stuck and you have to start over every single day. I mean, it really worked on a lot more levels than most of the scripts that I'd done at that point.
How much improvisation did you do in this film?
In that one?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I did a fair amount. I mean, I worked on the script, too, with him. And so I added things. And you're always adding things. But I can make lines up. That's not hard, you know. So I don't take credit for writing films unless I've really sat down at a typewriter and worked. But doing the same scenes over and over again, you're in the same situation over and over again, you're constantly getting a little bit more inspiration, and you have the benefit of, it's almost like lots of rehearsal, you know. If you rehearse something many times, more and more things come to you. So I had an advantage over the writer in that I got to really just sit in the space, the physical wear of it, and a lot of things come to you.
In the beginning of the movie, you have some very funny weatherman patter. Did you watch a lot of TV weathercasts in part to prepare for the role?
Well, that was when, that was when Weather Channel was first getting big, and I was one of the first people to really devote my entire life to the Weather Channel, which is now what I do. And I got a huge kick out of it, and I really insisted that they buy ads on the Weather Channel when the movie came out so I could watch the ads. But I love the Weather Channel. It's it really is, you know, the drama and the power of these fronts. You know, you get to see something really important happening, and it's dealt with in a real. And there's even more talk about it, but nothing can be done.
Why don't we hear you doing the weather from the beginning of Groundhog Day?
Okay.
Somebody asked me today, Phil, if you could be anywhere in the world, where would you like to be? And I said to him, probably right here, Elko, Nevada. Our nation's high at 79 today. Out in California, they're going to have some warm weather tomorrow, gang wars, and some very overpriced real estate. Up in the Pacific Northwest, as you can see, they're going to have some very, very tall trees. It'll be clear across the Rockies and the Great Plains mostly, but look out, here comes trouble. Oh, boy. Front coming our way. Look out. What's that going to mean to us here in the Three Rivers area? One of these big blue things, this cold, frigid Arctic air, this big mass coming out of the north. It's going to meet up with all of this moisture coming up out of the Gulf, going to mix together at high altitudes and cause some snow. Going out on a limb now, not going to hit us here in Pittsburgh, going to push off and hit Altoona. Close call, folks. Let's take a look at the 5-day.
That's Bill Murray in a scene from Groundhog Day. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Bill Murray, and his new movie is called Rushmore. I want to talk about another movie that I think is a really terrific film, and I regret that I think very few people actually saw it. And it's called Mad Dog and Glory. And the screenplay was by novelist Richard Price, who's probably best known for Clockers. And you play a loan shark in this who owns a comedy club and really wants to be a stand-up comic. And you even get to do stand-up as this mobster in the movie. Did you write the comedy for this?
I don't quite remember. I mean, I know I did something in it. I mean, I added something to it. But the basic idea was Price's. I mean, this is another example of not doing too much because the writing was so good.
Yeah, he's a great writer.
Yeah, he's really good. I mean, his stuff was so lovable. I couldn't wait to go to work and try to make these lines work. They were so challenging and so, you know, it was like having a knuckleball, you know. You didn't know how it was going to land, and you just tried to really be, just try to get out of the way and let the line work. It was a really good job.
I mean, you know a lot about delivery and comedy, but your character doesn't know a lot about it, particularly at the beginning of the film when he's really very stiff. And tell me a little bit about playing a comic who doesn't know what they're doing.
Well, I found that mobsters are, the ones I've met, are really funny people. You know, that's part of the paradox is that they're often the most charming people. And the terror of what they're like in their criminal side is almost hard to imagine. But his readings of his lines were had a menace to them. That, you know, it was his club. You could be thrown out if you perhaps you could be thrown out if you weren't enjoying yourself, enjoying the act. And it gave him a confidence to say it any old way he wanted. And he talked almost like he was talking to his posse, you know, to his own, what do the hoods call their group, you know, their gang. And it was an angry kind of comedian, you know. He was angry. He was, he had a chip on his shoulder, and he truly spoke down to his audience. At the same time was delighting in the fact that he was that what he was doing and the way he spoke his comedy was now getting public notice. You know, he was charmed with himself. He was really enjoying himself.
Why don't we hear a scene from early in Mad Dog and Gloria where you, the mobster, are doing comedy at the club you own, okay, with a lot of your boys in the audience.
Cosa Nostra. Our thing. Our thing, my ass. Cosa Nostra is Italian for cheap bastards. Cosa Nostra babies. Other babies, they're born, they cry, they go, wah, wah. Our kids, they cry, they go, father.
Yeah, he probably heard some comedian sometime say, well, you gotta work with your life. You gotta use your life as your comedy.
Well, in this movie, Bill Murray, you got to work opposite Robert De Niro. And De Niro plays a cop who's a forensic photographer, and he saves your life in a convenience store holdup. And to thank him, you loan him a beautiful young woman played by Uma Thurman, and you basically own this woman because she owes you about $75,000, and she pays it off by doing whatever favor you ask of her. And in this scene from later in Mad Dog and Glory, you've come to pick her up, but De Niro doesn't want her to go because he's fallen in love with her. Let me play an excerpt of this scene.
Bring it down, Wayne.
I love her.
You love her.
I own her! I knew it! I knew it! I knew it! Didn't I call it right on the nose when I saw you in the office? You're a schmuck if you don't think she's playing you like a violin right now. Women. F***ing women, you can't live with them. You can't kill them. Okay. If you want, you can assume the debt.
Assume the debt?
Yeah. Be my friend. For what, I don't exactly know. You're a cop. Maybe something, maybe nothing. You want me to forget about her for the next year. If I call you, you have to pick up the phone. That I can live with.
Bill Murray, what was it like to work opposite Robert De Niro? And I'm thinking, you know, you're such a verbal guy, and you're so good at improvising, and De Niro seems much less verbal.
Well, he is less verbal, but he's also, he's got a lot going on. This guy is, he's not, our favorite for nothing. He works very hard at his job. He's a hardworking guy, and he's serious about his job. I tend to, keep it light and goof around on the set just so I'm relaxed. And that got a little distracting for him at one point. I remember one day thinking, oh, God. He was like, yeah, can we just do this here now? But we've become friends. I met him over the years, pardon me, before this, and I like talking to him. I think he likes my verbal qualities, and I like his sort of surprising sense of humor. Working with him was, I actually had to fight this guy, too. And, you're fighting a guy who's some sort of a method actor. You don't know what's going to happen. I'm basically going to go inside on the raging bull here. I'm thinking, God, if he starts throwing combinations at me, I'm going down. He's in incredible physical shape. He's not an imposing figure to look at, but he is in incredible shape. And he works really, really hard. And he appreciated, and I love to work hard with people. And I like to work off camera with people. And, as great as he is, everybody needs another actor to help him do it, And that was just wonderful to find out that nobody's alone out there, no matter how good you are. And I delighted in really pushing him, and getting him, if he was supposed to be angry in a scene and I was behind the camera, I would infuriate him. I would enrage him,
How?
Well, he's a man who demands respect. That's one thing. You have to respect him. And if you disrespect him, he goes crazy. He will really not like you, But in character, you could get away with that. You could disrespect him, and it would enrage him. And he's, he's very proud of his heritage, too, And if you somehow didn't respect the heritage, you would see something happen in his eyes that was just terrifying, really scary. And I enjoyed getting it from him, and I think he appreciated that I wasn't so too afraid to do it,
Is this kind of intimidation that you're talking about extracurricular or just stuff in the script?
Oh, extracurricular.
Like what would you do?
Well, see, because I'm off camera, his lines are, and as long as I don't overlap him, I don't talk on his lines, I can say anything to get the response out of him. So if you called him, you know, used an Italian slur of some sort, he would just, he could not control himself. It's, you know, because it, you know, he grew up, where he grew up in the downtown, you know, there was an Italian neighborhood and they, you know, they were, you know, they had their turf and they were very protective of their own, you know. Anybody from the outside was a potential troublemaker, and those insults were a throwdown, you know. And you don't speak that way. If you spoke that way, you're just asking for real trouble, you know, and it had to be responded to, you know. So in character, you know, I could say things to him that would enrage him and infuriate him, you know, and I would build it up, go beyond the script. I find that that's really, you know, it's a technique, it's a thing you can do, that I don't think most people do it.
Bill Murray, his new movie Rushmore opens nationally this weekend. He'll be back in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Bill Murray. He plays a self-made millionaire and a school benefactor in the new movie Rushmore, which is set at a private school. We talked about Rushmore as well as several of his other films. I want to move on to another movie that I think is really funny, and it's a Farrelly Brothers movie, but it's one of their lesser-known films. It's called Kingpin, and you play a bowling hustler in it. And I'm wondering how the Farrelly Brothers humor compares to yours. And here's something, you know, we played a talk that they gave at the Comedy Film Festival in late 1998. And one of the things that they said in this talk was that you did a lot of improvising in the film, and that you were just so spontaneously funny that, you know, they just let you do it. I don't know what your memories are of that.
Well, that's right. That was I turned down this movie once, and then they came back and said, well, how about a different part? Actually, how about two different parts? They'd combined two different parts into another part, and they said, would you like to try this? And I looked at it, and I wasn't sure how the whole thing was going to work, but I was sort of coming out of a funny time in my life, and I thought, well, you know, maybe I should just go out there and make this work. I don't know if the whole thing's... Usually I don't take a job if I don't think the whole thing is going to work, and I didn't really know, so... But I wanted to work, and I knew I could be funny in this part, so I took it. And they're fertile fellas, and they're always game to change anything. They have more fun making movies than anybody I've ever worked with. It really is a riot. They were always saying, okay, how about, you know, they'd come up to me and they'd say, oh, here's one. How about if you stuck a banana in your nose? And, you know, their comedy is a little, it's different than mine.
And, yours is more character-oriented and theirs is more physical?
Well, I don't know. Theirs is a little more, I'll say rollicking, you know, but it also has a sort of a smatter kind of effect, you know. They will not stop at any, they will go to any length.
Yes, exactly right. They won't stop at anything. And were there times when you decided, no, that's too broad, we ought to stop here?
Well, I didn't see everything that was in the movie. And when I finally did see the movie, I was... God, I went, holy cow. I was happy with all my stuff because I did all my stuff, but the stuff I hadn't seen, I was just, oh, man, oh, God. You know, it was rough. The first scene of the movie is so rough, and I'd taken my boys, and they were, I don't know, I thought it'd be okay to take them to this movie. I mean, I think they were like 14 and 11 or 13 and 10 or something, and they were... shocked, really shocked. I mean, the first scene of the movie involves, sex with an extremely unflatteringly painted woman, you know. Not a painted woman, but a woman that's made to appear just almost like grisly, you know. And there, it's like retching and terrible. And I was stunned into total, like, ice, goose flesh, hair standing up on your skin, silence through the entire movie. And I left the movie theater thinking, oh my God, what have I done taking him to this thing? And We walked in silence from the movie to the car, which was in an underground parking lot. We must have walked 3/8 of a mile. And my 10-year-old finally said, "You were good, Dad." It was really sad. I felt like, you know, the child services was going to come and, you know, take me in. You took them to that? But so their taste goes beyond mine. You know, I wish I could work with them all the time and have Final Cut. You know, because I'd say, okay, just we don't have to do this one here, but all this stuff, they have so much funny stuff that they do.
I think the character that you played in Kingpin, the bowling movie, was able to draw really well on a certain type of character that you perfected back in your Saturday Night Live era. You know, the really kind of arrogant, self-congratulatory guy who's just kind of glad-handing everybody and using them. And when you win a tournament toward the end, you say, "Finally, I have enough money to buy my way out of anything. Finally, I'm above the law." It's just really funny. Did you write those lines, by the way?
Yeah, they let me do a lot of stuff in that movie. There's a lot of funny people in it. I was surprised how funny Woody Harrelson was. I never watched Cheers. That was like primetime TV. I never really got it or anything. And he always seemed like sort of an okay guy. He always seemed like sort of slow-witted or something, but he's very funny. Mm-hmm, and he surprised me how good an actor he was. He's very funny. And Randy Quaid, I've known a long time. I mean, he's a nut. He's very funny. And the girl was funny, too, Vanessa Angel. She was sort of underutilized, but she was good, too.
I'm going to ask you to choose a scene that you improvised in part from Kingpin.
Oh, well, I don't know. There's one line that I improvised I don't know if this is a play on the radio. There was a scene that I improvised the one line of, and it's a scene where I'm eating breakfast with Woody. And this guy just hits on anybody. He's like is it a peccary? Is that animal that's in the zoo? It's kind of a small-time pig that they can, it's one of the few animals they have in Central Park Zoo is a peccary. And they have a thought and then they want a mate. And then they have a thought and then they want a mate. It's pretty much that's their pattern. But this guy was like that, where his impulses were basically, "I'm fed and now a woman, please." You know. So I just sort of made up this line where it's just, and it's a horrible offensive line, but it's my standard of offensiveness and to show to, you know, as opposed to theirs. Just
okay, let's hear the scene.
It'll, this will offend my people out there on my wavelength.
This is Bill Murray in Kingpin.
Young bowler like yourself, the tour can be very difficult, very expensive.
Tanqueray and tap.
Keep them coming, sweets. I got a long drive. Do me a favor, will you? Do you mind washing off that perfume before you come back to our table? A little bad luck. If you had it today, all your dreams can go up in smoke. That's why even we veteran bowlers, we work our way from tournament to tournament. We need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra, that's what it means. You interested?
Interested.
Would you be interested in some extra income?
No, extra income.
You want to make more money? Okay. Why don't you go eat that outside and then come on back in? Hi.
Hello.
Not you. Hi.
That's a scene from Kingpin, which was made by the Farrelly brothers, who also made Something About Mary and Dumb and Dumber. And just in case our listeners couldn't make out the final words of that scene, can you tell us what you were saying to the women at the next table?
I said, no, not you. You.
Right.
It's just a guy who's hitting on women at the next table, and one woman responds and goes, "No, not you. You. I mean, I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to the lady next to you." And it just came into my head at that moment, and it was so horrible, such a horrible thing to say, that there was a moment of complete disbelief, and then everyone laughed really hard because it was, you know, the guy should be taken out and shot. But it was just the kind of thing that I would think would be the most offensive thing you could do. I was trying to paint a picture of a guy who was really
really a bad guy, and so that any second that Woody's character stayed with this guy was an investment in bad time. You know?
I guess I've always wondered how you so intuitively seem to understand a certain type of really crude, ego-driven personality.
Well, that's a loaded question, Terry. But how do I understand it? I don't know. I think show business further, can enrich that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And you can see people manifesting in a bizarre way that other people don't try to get away. Wouldn't try to get away with, but people get lost in a vanity space and just start going. You know, people that just take themselves too seriously. It's ripe for recreation, and it made it a lot more fun to have it in the bowling world. It made it just seem a little bit more ludicrous, and that his affectations is, well, I mean, bowling in Elvis-like Elvis outfits, and groupies, bowling groupies, and just a guy who was. Just on a sleaze roller coaster, he never touched anything pure, if he could help it.
My guest is Bill Murray. His new movie is called Rushmore. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Bill Murray. His new movie is called Rushmore. I want to get back to Rushmore. Rushmore is set at an expensive private academy, and your character is a wealthy benefactor of the schools. What kind of school did you go to? Did you relate to this academy kind of experience at all?
Yeah, I did. I went to an academy. I went to a Jesuit academy in Chicago, in the suburbs, and most everybody had money, and I was one of the ones that did not have money. I worked in the summer. I caddied in the summer and made enough money to pay my tuition, and then my money was gone. That was pretty much the money I made. So I would go through the school year without sufficient funds. I didn't have a car, and I didn't have, really a wardrobe to speak of. I used to take a lot of abuse for wearing golf shirts to school. Golf shirt, Murray, golf shirt. There were guys who would pimp you for wearing a golf shirt. I had inherited a collection of ill-fitting golf shirts from my older brothers, and that's what I wore to school.
Did you have a complex because you didn't have the money that the other students did, or you didn't have the clothes that they did?
I haven't heard complex in a while.
Me neither.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe I used the word.
Yeah,
I haven't either.
Heard complex. I had issues.
Issues. That's right.
But I had a complex issues there. I guess I had a complex. That's why I tip so heavy nowadays. I think I feel for people that, when I see somebody working in a golf shirt, my hands vibrate. Yeah, it was I guess I had a complex. It sounds worse than it was, but I remember it, and I remember growing up without it, and, I came from a big family, and there wasn't spare dough, and, and I get, think about a couple of weeks ago, I got very upset with my boys, my older boys, because I said, God, you're spoiled rich kids. I'm a failure. I'm a total failure, and, they got very sad, and... Well, that's who you are, Dad. That's who you were, blah, blah, blah. But they're actually really sweet guys, and, I was just giving them some tough love. But to grow up without money and now have money is just kind of it's a funny thing. I now loan money to the kids I knew in high school who've blown the money their parents left them, That's a kind of fun thing, But I don't know, to have a complex about it, well, I knew I wanted to pay my own way, and I felt very good to be able to provide my mother with things later in life. And, I remember the first year I made more money in Rima runs than my dad ever made, in a year. And I didn't even work. It was just reruns. And
right.
I thought, it's a funny world, funny life. So I grew up that way, the same way this kid grows up in Rushmore, and I could see, and I remember when they said, well, you'd be playing a tycoon. I thought, a tycoon? I'm going to play a tycoon, and the more I thought about it, I thought, well, hell, I am a tycoon. I am a self-made tycoon of some sort, and I got a set of a blue-collar chip on my shoulder, and so that part of it was not hard.
I know you have to go, so I'll just ask you one more question. Are you ever able to kind of sneak into lounges and watch lounge theater types?
Well, They usually catch me after a little while, and sometimes they get extremely nervous. Even the especially the musicians backing up, because they're like, oh, God. Because the guy performing may not get it anyway. You know, he may not be in their own little world, you know, so they don't even...
They actually think they're good.
They're out, yeah, and they're out of focus to the audience anyway. They don't really see. So it's fun to see the musicians behind them, and they'll spot me and go, oh, God. You know, and they'll be embarrassed because they are backing up a guy that is the guy that I did on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
And they'll be, like, winking, going, yeah, it's as bad as you say, and we got to do this every night. It's funny.
Did you ever want to sing for real?
Well, I never thought about it. You know, sometimes I think, God, I could have done this rock thing. This is no big deal. you know, I've been watching VH1 Behind the Music, and all you got to do is you just got to fight through that drug addiction and the serious car crash, and then, you know, it's the rebound where you rake the real money. But I thought about singing for real. I actually would like to be in a musical sometime, a Broadway musical. I think that'd be fun. I mean, so many of them are, you know, horrid, but I always thought that was something I could do. I always thought there was a place for a sort of an Americana kind of musical that I could do, you know? When I first came to New York, I sublet an apartment, and the girl left me the entire history of the Broadway musical in record form, and I listened to them one by one.
Oh.
And it was really an amazing education to hear every single one of them. And there are not that many that are good, even ones that were hits. There's not that many that were really great. And I thought you could do this. And you could sing it more naturally than they sing it instead of that crazy Broadway style that they have.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, you could do the crazy Broadway style for laughs in it, you know. And if you did it for a Broadway crowd, you could do some real singing, and then you could ruin some stuff the way that they do, and you'd have you'd have an entertainment possibility.
Well, I'd like to hear that. I hope you get to do that.
I hope so, too.
Well, Bill Murray, it's really been a pleasure. I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Well, thank you, Terry. I've enjoyed talking to you, too.
Bill Murray, his new film is the comedy Rushmore. It opens nationally this weekend. Here's Murray in the late 70s on Saturday Night Live, doing his now classic impression of a lounge singer.
Well, good night, everybody. And this is Nick Summer saying, a Minnehaha summer is a fun summer. That's what you're here for. That's what I'm here for. I am a fun guy, and I hope that you had fun tonight. Saying one more thing, I want you just to remember to sing. That's right, sing a song. Sing it loud, sing it short. Remember to put on some 612 when you go out. Sing it happy, not sad. You know we got bears over the garbage dump. Just flash your headlights. Sing of the good times and not the bad. Well, no matter if it's not good enough. This is my seventh summer up here. For anyone else to hear, just sing. Sing a song. Please won't you sing me a song? Thank you. Good night.
This is Fresh Air.